Yo, sub, Q-Tip, the ass triple edit. You know what I'm saying? We sound bomb and cats. Shut up your damn walking style. The beat junkies, you know what I'm saying? Is in control of all this, you know what I'm saying? Control of all things. And this is how we gonna do it in 2G, you know?
And probably perish, but truth will go on. I've also called, you know, in my work, I've always called truth the most destructive thing that anyone could ever know. The most corrosive thing is truth. It will get into your life. It will decimate your lie, and it will sanitize your mind, whether you like it or not. Or you'll break in the process. But that is a form of sanitization, because then you fall into the abyss. You're no longer a problem. Go and be insane then. As most people are choosing. The thing is that, you know, because freedom underlies all of these things in people, freedom is the basic, it's the mark of spirit. You know that spirit must be good, because only a good force, only a good spirit would give to you, impart to you something that allows you to flaunt spirit's own ordinances. How can that be a tyrant? The spirit is so generous to you, it offers you even the chance, the freedom to go against it. To right. Ignore it and to violate its laws. If that isn't right, if that isn't something extraordinary to contemplate.
Yes. Yes.
And of course it is, because from that comes all the evil in the world. You're free to be evil. You're free to be immoral. Hey, you're free to be amoral.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You're free to go and be self-destructive. Yeah. Because the creator that made you has given you of its own essence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But the sage and the vocational man sees it as it should be seen, which is, then what have I just learned about the DNA of my creator? If he should give me ultimate freedom, then I worship that. I bow to that.
Right, right.
I know that the heart of the universe is good. Mm-hmm. Just from this analysis, if freedom is indeed the basis of all consciousness and all life, then, because it could be anything else, couldn't it? It could be unfreedom. Try that on for fucking size.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Where you're duty bound in everything you're doing. Yeah. We have people out there who believe that that's the way things should be. But you see, it's not. It's the fragrance of absolute freedom to grow or to devolve, you know, to evolve or devolve, to move left, to move right, to stay perfectly still and be a fossil. But the very, if you really deeply contemplate, like Schelling did, like Kant did, right? You, and Hegel, you understand that, my goodness, what more do I need to know about the heart of my creator than that he imparted? And what he imparted to me isn't secondary to his nature. It is the core nature within spirit itself that then is imparted to me. So we're one. Now I have a tangible, not faith-based. Forget all that. There's no faith involved in what I'm saying. It's absolute knowledge. When Carl Jung was asked, do you believe in, you know, a higher force or a God or what? He says, I don't believe. I know.
Welcome back to episode 218 of the Alpha Male Buddhist from Brooklyn podcast. I'm your host, Miguel. So, in addition to podcasting, I also like to make, like, insightful videos. I put them on Instagram. I put them on my Rumble, my Odyssey. Odyssey, I don't really put that much. I really don't get any views on the Odyssey. But on Rumble, I got a couple things. On YouTube also, I have a few. So I do like to do the video content, the insightful video content, and I like to do the podcasting, but I'm also an avid consumer of podcasts and content. I really love listening to podcasts a lot. So it is one of the primary inputs that I get as far as information outside of me observing the world and assimilating it and taking everything in addition to that, I like to consume podcasts and get insights from that too, because it's very easy to get good, solid information from podcasts if you're choosing the right podcasters, you know? So I was listening to a few clips, and there were three clips that stood out to me, because usually when I go to do an episode, I'll come up with an idea. And again, for this episode 218, I had probably three or four different ideas. I was going to get into like the Ovon comedy and Tony Hinchcliffe, you know, whatever. But I says, let me get serious, because we're in a serious time right now. Because I'll put out anything, really, if I feel it's quality. You know, it doesn't have to be serious all the time. But I was listening, preparing to put my episode out, and I was going to put it out on different subjects. And I heard one particular podcast on Sam Tripoli talking with Ryan Christian from the Last American Vagabond podcast. He's got Whitney Webb there as a writer, and a whole amazing team puts out some really good content. So go support him over there at Last American Vagabond, and that's Ryan Christian. So Sam Tripoli has the Tinfoil Hat podcast, which is one of my favorite podcasts. He's consistent. He puts content out. The guy is extremely insightful in an unorthodox way. He's able to connect dots really well. He's sharp, very, very sharp when it comes to conspiracies and, you know, seeking out truth. So I really much respect to Sam Tripoli. So I was listening to the podcast, and it's actually, I took a segment out of it. I think I took about 35 or 40 minutes of it and put it on here, but I think the podcast itself is about an hour and a half if you listen to it. It's his last episode. Today is June 15th, 2024, so that would have been maybe a week ago or 4 days ago. It was pretty recent. I think it was yesterday it came out. So go check him out on that, and you could hear the old episode, but you could hear, you know, a good chunk of it in the beginning here, because it's real pertinent to what's happening with us today as far as what's being placed upon us. As you know, I don't want to get into that. So that's why I have these other speakers on, because I can express it out in the form of another speaker, and you can hear the connections between my trains of thought and what these speakers, the way they perceive it and see it, and then you can draw your own conclusions. So again, the first clip that you're going to hear is going to be a clip from a speaker. Well, the three speakers that you can hear from today are going to be Sam Tripoli, who hosted Ryan Christian from Last American Vagabond. So they're going to get into some politics and talking about what's going on in the world there. The other clip that I have on is going to be of Michael Tesserian speaking on the nature of God. It's a short clip. I think it's 2.5 minutes, but it's pretty profound. And Michael Tesserian is an extremely brilliant mind, one of the most brilliant minds of our time. I don't agree with every single little thing that he puts forth, but I agree with most of what he gets into. I mean, he's really, really sharp. Because when you really listen to Michael Tesserian, it kind of gets to the point where you have to find it within yourself and then get the resolution. Like, he doesn't lay it out there for you. He kind of puts it in a light that, you know, you can put the pieces together for yourself, and explains to you how he connects the pieces, which could help you connect the pieces. So that's the second clip. And then the third clip you're going to hear is from Neil Oliver. Neil Oliver, I can remember listening to Neil Oliver like 10 years ago, maybe 12 years ago. There was a podcast, Diet Soap, and just oddball, like in the way beginnings of podcasting, Neil Oliver. I think he's Scottish. But there's something about Neil Oliver that the way he expresses things and the way he explains them, he is able to integrate or compress a lot of information, vital information, in a very simple and concise way. So you'll listen to him for 10, 15 minutes, but you're able to see exactly what he's trying to express to you and understand him clearly. His ability to express himself and explain complex topics is masterful. He's really good, Neil Oliver. I like him. So I kind of just rediscovered him a few days ago. I'm on YouTube, and I'm like, wow, Neil Oliver on YouTube? And that's weird. Like, he doesn't get, not that I want him to get canceled, but he's able to speak a lot of stuff out there. And, you know, they can't wait to, like, take down whatever I had, because I copyrighted a Skippy Peanut Butter commercial. Who knows? But anyway, so yeah, we have the three speakers. We have Sam Tripoli, Tinfoil Hat podcast host, having on the guest Ryan Christian from Last American Vagabond. They get into it. That's the predominant clip that I have on there. It's like 35 minutes long, if not a little longer. Michael Tesserian is in the opening that you just heard, speaking of the nature of God. And then last, you're going to hear Neil Oliver. And what Neil Oliver gets into is, it's kind of hard to put it into words real briefly without kind of repeating what he's saying. So what better than to let him explain to you, or let him express his views as far as what he sees going on in the world today. So I do want to thank you for listening. Praise Yeshua HaMashiach's name. Praise Jesus' name, and let's get into this episode.
This is the I always go, once you think you've gotten to the middle of the rotten onion, no. I guarantee you there's just more layers going on. So it's like, oh, it's this dementia, guys. Like, is there a part of you, Ryan, that goes, this is all a demoralization campaign? Like I am so into this that everything, it's so much pressure from above, pressure from below, that they just are begging us to beg them to save us with martial law. They want martial right. law. That's what they want. Once martial law comes in and domestic terrorism, now the Constitution's null and void, and they can just go fucking nuts. There's no part of this that makes me think this is happening naturally. This is all meant to destroy. First of all, let me get your thoughts on that. I'm just talking, but what's your thoughts on that?
No, I agree. And the other only way to look at that is in a bigger way, which is the whole like globalization side of it. Great Reset, you know, World Economic Forum, but it's really the same point, right? Where I often point to Corbett's work on this, the engineered fall of the West kind of a conversation, where you have these like supranational entities that a lot of people argue are really the ones pulling a lot of strings in world government scenarios, or even, you know, US, France, whatever else. And that, you know, we're in a position now where the US has lost their position, the clout, the influence. And so they're shifting something else. They don't care what the power structure, as long as they have the control. And so that's kind of the idea. Maybe they're putting Bidens and Trumps in front of us, so we call for something different. You know, we ask for the Great Reset. They ask for our own enslavement. I think that's a huge part of this that we should at least consider.
I love that. And, you know, I've been really in this thing right now on Twitter, because there's a part of the right that's trying to convince everybody that Hitler was a good guy. Like, there's this where, like, he's just fighting the bankers, man. He's just out there. This is what they won't tell you about Hitler. And I'm like, well, then again, why did he go into Switzerland? Why didn't he take out the Bank of International Settlements, which was completely made to get reparations from Germany for World War I? Explain that to me. Explain to me why the head of the Federal Reserve, of the New York Federal Reserve, was on the American IG board, which helped build the German military apparatus. Back up. Tell me that. If he's fighting the bankers, why is he working with the bankers? And then nobody ever has an answer. Go on. Sorry, Ryan.
No, it's exactly the point. I mean, there's so many examples you could show that completely just annihilate that narrative. But what I think is happening is that we're seeing this. I argue there's some of the right, not all conservatives, but when I say the right, I mean like the two-party illusion, top of the right kind of conversation. Yeah. That are pushing this. Some of them may not even realize where that's coming from. But I argue this is a direct Zionist manipulation that is trying to create the sentiment that they need to justify their existence. And this gets into the whole Zionism using Judaism as a kind of a buffer to manipulate the world, which a lot of Jews are calling out right now. But that, to me, is about trying to create the idea that when they point at someone like me, who is simply going, I'm not talking about Jews or Christians or Muslims or Arabs. I'm just talking about what the Zionist government is doing to children, or killing them over here, or occupying this. And the point is, they then try to conflate that with, yeah, oh, Ryan says Hitler's a good guy. And I'm like, yeah, I never said, that's crazy. Yeah. But that's what they want, right? Yes. To conflate those conversations.
Yes. Yes, Ryan. Totally. 100%. And like, whatever you the listeners here thought about the Adam Green interview, I got a lot from it. We don't necessarily agree on everything. I'm a spiritual guy, and We have different views on Jesus, and that's okay. But this isn't a show just to talk to people I agree with. This is, let's hear every side of the story. But man, when he brought up that like all of the Abrahamic religions are basically working to basically elevate Zionism and elevate the Zionist apocalypse that these really old dirtbags are all like trying to push on us because they know they only got a couple days left. They're like, ah, let's go. Come on. I've been doing this for 80 years. When's this thing going to pop off? I don't have much longer. And he's totally 100% correct in that. They're all working. Each one of them, Islam and Christianity, play their role as well. As I was talking to Johnny, I forget what show it was on, but it's like it's like a roller derby meme, right? You know, when roller derby and they're you know, they have this play where they like kind of form a wall and they slingshot the scorer. That is that's the Abrahamic religions. It's like Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, and then they're just slinging Zionism to score. And he's like totally right about that. They're all working together because each one of them has their own belief on what this is going to happen once they get to this Zionist apocalypse, and they don't understand. They act like they're fighting with each other, but they're all playing a part of a war, playing a game in this, you know?
Yeah, well, I'm glad you brought that up. I had a great interview with Adam as well about this exact topic, and you know, I'm with you on this. Like, I this was actually a point that I really appreciated because I also appreciate that Adam I didn't see in your interview with him, but he wasn't being forceful about it. We're able to disagree amicably, which I respect him for. And you know, I'm a Christian, right? And we had this whole conversation about it.
Yeah.
And what I think is interesting is, I disagree with organized religion. Each their own, but I think there's a big difference there when you're talking about these organized religions, especially when you get to like the megachurch level in any of these religions. I think there's a problem there. And so what I think he's highlighting is that element of it. There's always been a level of manipulation. But I come back to the point where I'm a Christian. I believe in my beliefs under that structure outside of organized religion, and I believe that in any element, Judaism, Islam, Muslim, whatever, that there are people that simply believe in these ideals and that they act in with good faith, and which usually means not killing people for no reason, not you know, destabilizing countries, and yet you have these power structures that are abusing these and have far back as you can look. I think you and I even talked about this, going back to the Catholic Church and the history of, you know, it's just power structures. I mean, families would put their second sons to be cardinals, and it's not because they're religious; it's because there was power. You know, and yes, there was a level of of religion involved in that. And so, when he gets into the idea that, you know, all three of them are at their core not what they seem, I disagree with that to an extent, but I agree that there is what he's talking about. So they can both exist simultaneously. Yeah, I don't know if he agrees with that, but I think that's what we're dealing with in Zionism. I even had overlapping this conversation with what I talked about with David Icke. Going back to Sabbateanism, which we brought up in that interview as well, which a lot of people argue is like the foundation for all three of communism, Zionism, and Nazism.
Yes.
And the core point is about Sabbateanism was about like infiltrating religions and politics. And I'm like, my God, look at where, when he said that to me, it just like blew my mind. It's like, that's what we're seeing right now.
Yes.
And we point at that and they say, you hate Jewish people. Yes. It's like, where's that even coming from? It's crazy.
Yes, dude. Yes. You nailed it. That's the best shit I've heard in a long time. You've really crystallized what I've been thinking. And, you know, I have a good friend of mine, and she's, like, killing it on the internet. And we had a conversation. And, you know, she has some strong opinion about Jews. And I'm very, I'll say this. My whole opinion is everybody on the internet should be treated like white people were on Twitter in like 2018, 2019, where you can just tee off. Like, if you pull some shit, you get teed off on. Okay? That's my opinion. We talked about the Ari Shaffir and Howie Mandel clip, and you know how you know, Ari's like, I don't see it that much. And he's like, they're coming after us. And I go, well, I mean, welcome to the internet in 2024, man. Now, there's no sacred cow. There's no sacred cows. There's no protected classes anymore, as it should be. If something bad happened to you in the past, that sucks. It does not shield you from criticism. And that's where we are right now. So I'm like, everybody should be treated the way white people were on Twitter in 2018. Tee off, bro. Blacks, gays, women, men, trans, everybody. You do something stupid, you get to get called out on it. That's my opinion, and I'll defend that to the end of the days. Okay, I'll defend it.
And this is absolute free speech. That's what it actually means. Or just, there doesn't need to be absolute there, but free speech means this game they play where there's like limits to it. That's not free speech. But there's another point to add to that, which I'm sure you agree with, you know, is that the idea being that anybody should be protected in what they want to say. You can go out there and say the most racist, disgusting slurs you want. That's your right to free speech. We have a right to say you're a disgusting person. And we as a society can say you shouldn't even be a part of us. But they have a right to say it, right? And the point of these platforms should be able to allow people to say what they want. The game they play where your statements, no matter how disgusting, translate to violence is irrational. Now, obviously, each person is responsible for their own actions. So if you say something and you're influenced to the top and you go out and make that's that person's choice, you know? But the problem is, like, to take Howie Mandel's point there, you know, that they perceive this, and I'm not talking about just Jewish people. I'm talking about anybody that argues right now that Jewish people have some outsized attack, like the way they describe it as this dark looming cloud of anti-Semitism. While you can literally prove, and I'm talking, and I've done this exclusively, like, or extensively, I should say, on the show, where you can prove that most of these big statements they've made, or the big claims, or the woman stabbed in the eye, or marching through saying we'll kill the Jews in these schools, they proved them not to be true.
Yes.
The cop came out in Congress and said that didn't happen. I was there. We investigated. It wasn't real. Woman stabbed in the eye. She made the whole thing up, and it was like brushed by her face, and she didn't even have a blemish. You know, my point is not to say there's not anti-Semitism. There's racism. That's clear. But there's a very clear manipulation, and I argue there's the Zionist manipulation we were just discussing.
Yes.
But the wiping it away as if it doesn't exist is also the problem. And I think that's where that side comes in, where you get these propagandists online, either pretending and it's some bot Hasbara thing, or just people that don't know what they're talking about, are pushing this idea that conflate genuine criticism with racism. And I think this is not just about free speech. It's about suppressing genuine investigation.
Yes.
Right? We should be able to look at what these people are saying and doing, especially as they're committing genocide. You know, it seems pretty obvious to me. And I'm talking about Israeli government, not anything else.
100%, dude. And, you know, it's I say this all the time, dude. If you're telling me anti-Semitism is on the rise, and it's very on a lot of podcasts, you hear people say that because it's safe, right? And the power players that control money in the content creating universe love hearing that shit. Right. So, anti-Semitism on the rise everywhere. I go, can you discern between hatred of Jews and criticism of Netanyahu, the Likud, or however you pronounce that party, and the Likud? I call it the Likud party, but Likud and the IDF. Can you separate the criticism? Because you're not right now. Because the truth is that they must, at all costs, make criticism of Jews a felony, okay? Literally a felony, because once that firewall is gone, now you're getting to the real power source on so many levels, right?
Well, on one side of it, too, though, you're talking about like what we just said. You should have every right to be able to say what you want about Jews or Christians or whatever else. But to your point, you're absolutely conflating criticism of government actions with an entire religion, not a race, not an ethnicity, because that's also manipulation. That's Israeli, not Jewish, right? But the point is that also with Palestine, people saying free Palestine are being called anti-Semites. It's like, how do you even get from one to two there? That doesn't even make sense. Unless you, I mean, the point is, somebody out there could say free Palestine and be thinking, yeah, I hate Jewish people. That's always possible. But for them to just make that leap, or, you know, things like From the River to the Sea or these games that they play, always possible. But to your point, you conflate those things. All you're truly doing is making anti-Semitism more likely. You're driving people to feel resentment towards the group that you're pointing to, not us, right? And that's manufactured to me. And people, like, for the ADL's point, this is important. Whether we're talking about any number of these things, they've conflated, or January 6th was the point that I was going to bring up as well, where they conflate everything that's there, right? So a grandma on her phone, we just investigated her, that goes as domestic terrorism, right? The ADL investigates all these people saying free Palestine, and every investigation goes down as anti-Semitism. So they go 400% spike in anti-Semitism. That's where that statement comes from. That's what it stems all the way back to. And most of those people are Jewish. These Jewish Voices for Peace or Holocaust survivors that are there with these protests, and they're calling them all anti-Semites. Yep. It's very organized and concerning.
And again, it is this game of manifestation where they're just manifesting you associating people wanting to stop slaughter with terrorists. That's the whole emotional manipulation. And, you know, for me, man, as you study history, right, the Bolsheviks, they show up in different forms all the time, but their whole job is to destroy within. that go into countries in which no other country could invade or else they'll get their dicks kicked in. You know, and we saw it with the Bolsheviks in Russia. We saw it in China, okay? Dude, 100% everybody, the Nazis were the Bolsheviks of Germany, okay? You just had to play the game differently, okay? You can't run the same playbook against every single team. You just can't do it. So you had to conflate it in it. You had to attack. It's not conflate, but you had to attack in a different way. Okay.
And let's kick this up a gear here, a notch here, because the point to make there is that the Zionist element during the World War II. I mean, you could look this up on Wikipedia for crying out loud. They tried to align themselves with Nazi Germany.
Yes.
I mean, this is Dan Cohen makes this point more than once on his research that they did so, and again, easy to verify, well past this final solution. So explain for me out there how you could argue the state of Israel as a Zionist state was created to defend against that while at the time they were working alongside the entity to create what they wanted. And even the CIA has documents where, and I've done our shows on this, directly from CIA.gov that says that the Zionist entity was willing to sacrifice all the Jews in the Arab countries to get what they wanted there. That doesn't sound like anything.
100%.
You know, it's like a lot of this part. Go ahead.
No, 100. Go on. I'm sorry, I was yelling at you. No,
that was basically it. I didn't want to miss your point.
No, I mean, like, I study Nazi. We go here. We say Nazi and Zionist Germans, and they had literally a deal. They had an agreement. It was the HAAVARA agreement. I forget. I can't pronounce it. Havara agreement. And it literally was agreement between the Nazis and the Zionist Germans that are German Zionists that they would make a deal to get all these Zionists from Germany to Israel if they agreed to buy German goods doing it. There's an agreement right there. Mm-hmm. Nobody ever tells you that. Nobody ever tells you that, dude. Nobody ever tells you that. Now, here's the thing. You have Alan Dershowitz, who, I don't know if you saw his debate with Greenwald. Did you ever see that? Were you able to see that debate?
I saw some important clips of it and some things.
It's the best.
Greenwald just ripped apart, which is good.
Alan Dershowitz came out as gay after that debate because he got penetrated by Greenwald over and over again, dog. Just completely fucked up. So, but you know, the whole narrative that Alan Dershowitz has, because he's 80 and it worked back in the day, which was yelling Nazis all the time. We should have stopped the Nazis. I wish someone would go, hey, Alan, if there's no Nazis, is there Israel? And the answer is no. There's no Israel without Nazis. So if we stop the Nazis, there's no Israel. They go hand in hand. It's a giant lie, dude.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things I love, you know, that you guys talk about. It's just that, you know, even whether it's forgotten histories or just completely misrepresented history. But the Lehi party and the Irgun party are the two kind of foundational elements that we're talking about that are they're the Zionist organization, right? The Lehi party distanced themselves from it at the beginning, the Zionist organization, because it was they were calling themselves terrorists at the time. That's what they called their own people. The point is that they acted like it was bad, because I think even then, even Israelis at the time, before it was Israel and after, made comments about this, like, we shouldn't be treating the Palestinians like this. And so they distanced themselves from it. But now my point is that it's still so prevalent that they came back around and they now praise the Lehi party. They have a Lehi pin that they give people for nominations. It's so obvious that they embrace that history, but don't want anyone to talk about it. They have laws in Israel that don't even allow them to discuss, whether it's media or anything else, discuss things around like the Nakba or things that will make them look like what they claim they're not.
Of course.
Think about how crazy that is, that you have a stated policy that you're not allowed to highlight things that are true because it exposes our lie. That's a policy that they have. And yet we don't talk about this in the U.S. conversation. It's crazy to me.
Now, the craziest one is they don't allow DNA test.
Yeah.
How crazy is that? Too. You're not legally allowed in Israel without a court order to get a DNA test.
I just downloaded something about that exact point, and I don't think I have it right yet.
It's absolutely insanity, dude. It's absolutely insane.
there's a guy, there's a video that like went semi-viral. The guy went out and basically did one of these tests, right? And he's like, I believe I'm 99% Ashkenazi Jew, and I'm definitely from Israel. And they did the whole thing, and it came back 99% European. You know, and there's a reason that they don't like that overlap, because yeah. The inside conversation is that the Ashkenazi Jew, that's like the real Jew, right? In the minds of the Zionist elements, right? And so there's a problem the way that they, like, ask the Ethiopian Jews in Israel how they're treated, right? They, even Haaretz will say that they're treated as second-class citizens. So there's a very clear divide it's between so certain crazy. Elements of this.
It's
and so,
so
that's
crazy.
So important to me. And weirdly enough, if we want to get into the weird overlaps here, this could be nothing. But during COVID-19, one, and this is, RFK Jr. got screamed at by the Israeli conversation because he pointed this out, is that there was a study, and it's a peer-reviewed study, it's very prominent, that highlighted that the two elements that were least affected by the COVID-19 element, assuming we believe that's even real, were Ashkenazi Jew and Amish. And it was only because the H2 receptor was different. Basically, they just were least affected by it. And I'm like, well, that's pretty interesting, especially when you overlap that with the Israel working with South Africa for specifically ethnic-focused weapons, which is very public. It's an easy conversation to look up. So it makes you wonder about that overlap, which just something to consider.
No,
could it be a coincidence? No. Obviously not, right?
Yeah. Well, dude, it's
crazy.
Just unbelievable. And then you can go so deep into this. I know, again, Adam Green doesn't believe in Kazarians and all that stuff. I think there is something to that, and which is fine. It's great, you know. And you get into trade routes and why Israel, you hear a lot of people talk about how, is it the Holy Land? I don't know. I know it's the birthplace of a lot of religions and all that stuff. But like, it's a trade route, bro. It's a trade route. It is the quickest way to get goods from Africa and Asia to Europe. Okay. And if you control that, that's money and power.
And Gaza historically was a massive trade route. That specific location was super important, and you know, more, maybe one of the reasons why it's occupied now. But at the very least, we can't let them have that kind of power. We can't let them have their own ports and that kind of engagement. Interesting.
Yeah, 100%. You're controlling, because right now you have to use the Egyptian Canal to go get, and it only goes one way for like 12 hours, then goes another way for. It's slow, but it makes Egypt $8 billion a year. And that's why they don't want the Palestinians, because they know once the Palestinians leave Gaza, they're never going back. So now that no one will take them, because everyone knows, because that's, everyone believes that's, there's a debate whether it's Holy Land, but that is the center of so many of these religions. Okay. Mm-hmm. Let me preface it. I said that wrong. People debate where Israel actually is. Okay. Where the actual place is. And I'm sorry, the Congress of Zionism or whatever it was, with the guy who founded Zionism, they were debating three different places to put Israel. One was in Africa, one was where it is now, and one was in Texas.
No.
They were thinking about putting Israel. You want to write a TV show? Write that. What happens if Israel showed up right in the middle of San Antonio, dude?
You know, that's fascinating, actually. If somebody wanted to actually, of course, today it might be more possible. Before, it would have never been allowed, but make like a hypothetical series or movie about how, had the Zionists chose Texas and how that would have gone forward, how the, like, sort of like a Man in the Tower series, that whole Nazi thing, that'd be cool.
That would be cool, but you know, they chose there, and I think it's because it's a trade route, and that's why nobody wants the Palestinians, because they know they're going to give up all the Temple Mount, all that stuff that is so big in Islam. They're going to give that right up, and that will be gone, and then, you know, then the third temple, and then craziness. Yeah. So
that's wild.
I want to get into October 7th for you. I feel like, you know, we had the releasing of these hostages. It could have been done quick, easy, but of course Israel picks to kill 200 people, you know, women and children. And nobody's saying anything about that. All the people that marched for BLM are really, a lot of them are silent. I know that. I'm talking about Hollywood, you know. When we watch the roast of Tom Brady and Tony Hinchcliffe does a joke about how Jeffrey Ross likes, Jeffrey Ross is so Jewish, his favorite part of the football game is the coin flip. And he loves when they throw deep bombs at brown people, and the whole place got quiet. To hear that? Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. No, all the BLM people in Hollywood now are okay with people getting slaughtered, children, dude. You know, children getting slaughtered. But we get into the October 7th, and like, you know, I went on Jesse Lee Peterson's show, and like, he's a Zionist, and I like him. But I go, hey, dude, how come they moved the festival like 24 hours closer to the border? Why did they short an Israeli ETF? Well, this and this. What are your whole thoughts?
Oh, well, I mean, man, there's 45 different angles to get into around how obvious there's something that went on that day. I mean, whether it's the foreknowledge, and it goes back months, not just Egypt and different things that happened within a few weeks, but I mean, there were examples of their own people on their different posts trying to inform their commanders about how they saw the training, they're getting ready, and they said, if you bring this up again, we'll put you in jail. That's literally that. Damn. I think that was Haaretz that reported that. And we saw the foreign countries that were saying, you know, this is happening, it's coming. You know, for that first point, my opinion is ultimately the thing that makes the most sense, actually, is that there's elements of their government that absolutely allowed this to happen for whatever reason, whether it's prophecies, whether it's manufacturing more reason to justify their existence. But I think that there's at least some element there that makes me think that some of them might not have been, but it's just as likely that this was completely allowed. I mean, there's also, I guess, one of the people argue that it was just that they are not as good at what they do as they pretend to be. That's also certainly possible. But after that, I mean, there's so many elements to this that are so wildly ignored by the establishment, as the Hannibal Directive example, where we have now, I mean, tank drivers, helicopter pilots, the security heads of the Kibbutz Be'eri himself said that we saw them shoot their own people. We saw Yasmin Porat, who's been one of the most recognized figures in all this, who is an Israeli Jew herself from the Kibbutz, who said she was in the building. She came out. She watched them bomb people in there. We have hostages coming back saying that they shot at people while they were being rescued on their way back to Gaza. Then they came back and they said that they were bombing them while they were there. They were most scared of Israeli bombings. You've seen them shoot in cold blood their own hostages. Three of them that came out in, you know, waving a sign saying "Save us," and they shoot two of them. One runs away. 15 minutes later, and this is reported by Haaretz, they're coaxing him back out. He's saying, he's saying things in Hebrew. Don't shoot me. They call him back out. Two of them shoot him dead. That's the three hostages they killed. I just don't know how in the world you can watch that story. And this was Haaretz reported this, that you don't see an element of, we don't want them to come home. For those that don't know the Hannibal Directive, public and verifiable reality. It comes from a high-ranking Israeli official who was taken. And it cost them dearly, both in their reputation, and they had to send a whole bunch of people back that they had, you know, illegally detained to get this person back. And so they decided, look, in the future, if this happens, we kill them, all of them, to save ourselves all of this problem. And they, I guess, rationalized that's better for Israel people. And so when this happened, there's a colonel from Israel who on the record said this was a mass Hannibal. It's very the Cradle did a great article about it. He's on record. And you can see that they're ordering to shoot people as they leave, or at the very least, they said shoot anything that's moving, whether or not there might be civilians. And there's actually calls on the record from the radios where they're going, well, there might be civilians there, and they tell them to fire anyway. You know, so there's very clear overlaps that show you something's very wrong about this. I mean, there's so many levels to what could have happened around October 7th. Efrat Fangenson, who is an Israeli Jew who's been talking about this from the beginning, she said this was an operation. Like false flag level, like to the point of where it's like a lie hop, like let it happen on purpose kind of a thing. And I think that's it makes the most sense. But either way, now going forward, it's explicit. I think it's obvious they do not want people to come back. That's my opinion. But every time they get these hostages back, they come back and say they were treated well, they were fed. You know, obviously they're kidnapped, and I'm not downplaying that, especially the ones that aren't military targets, whether IDF or police, you know, just like the children that were taken, for example, or the younger ones. Those are crimes. But my point is that they're kidnapped. That's terrifying in its own right. But they come back, and some of them look like they gained weight. And this is not my opinion. It's very clear. And they've been saying that they treated them well. They let them go shopping. I mean, how crazy is that? Then you look at the Palestinians coming back of the Israeli prisons, 100%. And they're emaciated. They've lost limbs. It's terrifying.
Yeah, you know, I made a joke, and Dana's like, too soon, but I'm like, you know, they look like they all got back from fat camp. That's what they look like they got back from. Like, they, you know, they're just like, oh, it was so hard. They did, you know, they made us work out and all this stuff. And it did look like it was a bad hostage situation. And, you know, I'm really glad you bring that up, Ryan, because, you know, for me, it's like I'm really in this place right now where I take a look at the Holocaust and I go, what happened there? You know, this is Sam speaking, not Ryan. He could jump in if he wants. He doesn't have to. But, you know, for me, it's like, I think they just took out the Orthodox. I think the people who were anti setting up Israel, because it's stuff within the holy books say that it's not supposed to happen. They just took them all out and got rid of them, and that's my opinion. I'll stand behind it.
October 7th. You're talking about
the Holocaust. What I'm saying is the Holocaust. But the reason I bring this up is because they'll sacrifice their own. That's what people don't understand. Like, you know, if you take a look at 9/11, it's not even just like Zionists. It's just like anybody in power. Right. They have zero problems with taking out their own if it's a means to an end.
So, 100%.
You know, and it's just like if you go, oh, these people were behind 9/11. You have people go, oh, there were these people in there. Why would America do that? Why would Israel do that? They have no problem with taking out their own. If it leads to bigger, if let's say there was a time where there was no internet and everyone didn't have a phone on their with a camera, and we didn't know anything that was going on there, the story would be Hamas killed all these people.
Right.
It wouldn't be the IDF did it. It wouldn't be any of that directive. It would be the Hamas did it, and all of Israel would have lost their mind. All of the Jews around the world would have lost their mind, and they would be so mad at the Palestinians. But now, because of phones and just hard work of people who literally sacrificed their life, are like, no, dude, this was the IDF just pulling a Hannibal directive, man, and just killing everybody. I mean, there's a history of it.
But that's important to point out the kind of independent media side of this, which is clearly why they're so desperately trying to censor and shut down platforms, because there's a way around what they're trying to do now. But, you know, I also want to point out, though, Robert Inlakesh is a great writer for TLAV, and he has done a lot of work on this really extensively. And we should acknowledge there's evidence that I think is undeniable that there were elements, whether both Hamas or Palestinian Islamic Jihad or just random civilians, that all came through the openings in these fences. So there's all these overlaps to where there could be any number of people that were involved or responsible. And there is evidence of them killing people that were not POWs, people that were not military targets. And let me actually explain why I say that. But then for example, taking children back. Those are crimes. I've said that since day one. There's no way you argue that those were valid targets. So we can have an objective conversation and say that you can prove, and it's objective at this point based on their own sources, that the IDF, whether it be Hannibal directive or not, was killing their own people, whether accidentally or not. That happened, and arguably the majority. But you can clearly see that there was something else happening there. But to the why I say military target, let's not forget, and this is what gets people so upset, and this is what frustrates me about, you know, the political game. We can't just be objective about this. Under the Fourth Geneva Convention, a occupied territory, which no matter what the screams and narratives are, that's what this is occupied territory, according to everybody who was standing in the conversation, which means they have a legal right to armed resistance, whether it was random people in Palestine, Hamas, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, doesn't matter. They're acting in the resistance of Palestine. They have a legal right to attack military targets and military entities, right? And take them as POWs and detainees. That's what war is. So when that happened, it was legally protected. People like Francesca Albanese, human rights for the United Nations, has made this clear. Then, if there were crimes committed, whether it was rape or torture or shooting innocent people or kidnapping, those are crimes. Those two things can exist at the same time. But we get into this hyperbolic conversation about where they just kind of whitewash it into one direction. And I think that's the larger point, right? That we're trying to hide this behind something it's not. And to your point, because of people like us are highlighting these things and showing them what they're seeing, and then, of course, showing what's happening in Gaza, it's shaken to the core, a lot of people, Zionists, Israelis, Jews, Christians, Americans, because they never saw this coming. And I would point out that, as Adam Green highlighted, there's more Christian Zionists in the world than there are Jewish Zionists.
I agree.
Game they play where we're saying, well, it's only Jews. No, it's that doesn't make sense based on that exact point.
I always say this, not all Jews are Zionists, not all Zionists are Jews.
Right.
You know, and again, they're all working together. But then we start to see in America this real awakening of the effects that one area has. Now, Johnny, we've had the discussion. Why do you think they call it the State of Israel?
I don't. I think it's irrelevant. in political science, a state is a country. So
okay. I mean,
that's what I think. I don't think you're referencing this conspiracy theory that it's like an American state, right?
Well, it's either an American state or it's it's just part of this country in some weird kind of way, almost like an Alaska in a weird way. But what we're starting to see is like maybe it's not our territory. Maybe we're their territory.
Now that I buy.
You know,
yeah, certainly possible. Well, remember that the it started from Lord Rothschild, the British, and the Balfour Declaration, right? And so you could see an overlap of more than just the United States there. But I would argue that there's been, the colonial mindset is not just Israel, obviously Britain, the United States to this very day, quite frankly. And so it could clearly be an overlap of a lot of things. And I think you can prove that there is wild, I'm in fact not going to get into who and what, but I'm having this conversation today online with somebody back and forth about how it's undeniable. Pulling aside all of the nonsense, all of the propaganda and the narratives, that AIPAC has an overwhelming influence over policy, over politicians, like not lobbying style, but like way beyond that. And I can explain that if you'd like. But then Israel itself, obviously, has an overwhelming influence over the outcome of policy in this country. And they're both of the same thing, in my opinion, but they're both separate topics. And that can't be contentious. They themselves are praising this. They just recently, I think MSNBC, for crying out loud, did a breakdown showing you that AIPAC funded every single leader on every side of the both sides of the paradigm. There's something wrong there when you recognize that they're pulling funding or spending millions to have somebody removed or to challenge policy. Lobbying is supposed to be the idea that they give money to somebody because they support the person, and in hopes that they can have an influence over their outcome of the policy, and that if next time it comes around, next election season, maybe we won't support them. AIPAC is acting immediate and in real time against policy, against actions, posting things on Twitter to have people taken down. I mean, that's alarming as hell, especially as they're openly acting for the interest of Israel. You know, that shouldn't be contentious or about race. That's about politics, and that's crazy to me.
I saw a great meme, and it was basically that... the Federal Reserve prints the money, we send aid to Israel. Israel takes that aid, sends it to AIPAC, and then AIPAC basically uses it to control our politicians. So I said this, like, the whole purpose right now with what is happening in America, the dumbing down of America, all that stuff is so you cannot participate in your government. That you have no clue what your government's doing because you won't understand what our Federal Reserve, the American Central Bank, the United States Federal Reserve is doing to the world.
Mm-hmm.
You are paying interest on something that is funding the Cultural Revolution going on in America, destroying your grandchildren, your kids and your grandchildren. All this stuff is all astroturf. None of it is naturally happening. It is Babylonian money magic, funny money that is bribing everybody and turning them retarded to do stupid shit and destroy us from within. And like, we are literally having people print money, send it to this country. This country sends it to this way too powerful lobby group that completely manipulates our whole entire fucking government. And it's like, why can't Israel have a Federal Reserve and print their own money? Why can't Ukraine print their own money? Why? Because it doesn't fit into what the Federal Reserve is meant to do, which is destroy our currency from within.
I agree. And I think that these are like different problems, but part of the same larger issue, And I think that, and this goes back to what we were just saying about whether it's Israel influencing the United States or the United States influence Israel. I mean, I quite frankly think that you could argue that it's oscillated, but I think right now it's very clear that all these mechanisms are being applied to. I mean, here's a good way to put this. How do we explain that just Joe Biden, for example, but pretty much all these politicians are acting outwardly and immediately against their interests? Continuously, because of what's going on in Israel, Joe Biden has lost all of his support. His own people call him Genocide Joe, and yet he's crippling down. He's just standing by Israel. It doesn't make any sense other than there's something else going on there. And so you could argue that things might not have always been that way. But let's not forget the Epstein conversation, right? Acosta made it clear that they were Mossad, CIA overlap conversation there, or the sexual blackmail that we can all prove. So we know that's a real thing. So my point is we need to ask whether there's other forms of compromise, people that are being compromised or being bribed in whatever Congress anywhere. And that's not about race or ethnicity. It's about politicians and government. And we know the CIA does this all over the world. So why is it so weird to bring it up about Israel when we can literally see it in one way with AIPAC? But I don't understand why somebody like Joe Biden or anybody else would continue to stand by this when you got the ICJ and the ICC and like every human rights group in the world, every UN apparatus, even most of these countries now are saying, yeah, it's genocide, and they just keep at it. And now they're participating on the ground. That seems like there's something very wrong there. So it could be that they've aren't always been that controlled or that there's some pressure being applied there. It's interesting.
Hey, guys, what I can't believe is how there's anybody that doesn't see what's happening in Israel and with the Palestinians, how that's not anything different than it's different in weird ways, but it's pretty much the same as like weapons of mass destruction and the slaughter of 4 million Middle Easterns, I think Iraqis, right? And then Afghanistan and all that stuff. And like, you know, this overhanded response to something, which is most likely a false flag. Now, if something's a false flag, that doesn't mean people didn't die or that there the controlled opposition didn't kill people. I think they do kill people. You know, that's their role. That when you're controlled op, like Al-Qaeda and ISIS is, right? Like, answer me this, everybody. If ISIS is such bad guys who are in their Islamic, an Islamic terrorist group, why aren't they going into Gaza right now whooping ass for fucking the Palestinians? Yeah. Oh, yeah, because they apologized to Israel for actually accidentally shooting at them.
Right. Or how about a recent example where, and this happened more than once over the last couple of months, where right at the peak height of rhetoric, ISIS attacks Iran. Well, hold on. Didn't you just tell us Iran was the leading sponsor of terrorism? How does that make sense? And then, you know, all of this is shockingly obvious if you barely scratch past the surface, which is what you're highlighting. These are proxy armies of the U.S. and Israel. The fact that we can't be honest about that when you have so much evidence, you know, if you just look at like James Corbett's documentary on Al-Qaeda or Ben Swan's documentary from years before that, showing you where this really funds back to with the receipts. It's unreal that we can't acknowledge that. Saudi Arabia made a statement a decade back that basically acknowledged that, yes, it was a creation that they were involved in, but they involved in, but basically they lost control of it to some elements of it. Now, that itself could have been a narrative to kind of remove themselves from accountability. But in any sense, you know, we can go back to things like the Mujahideen and Soviet Union. I mean, Charlie Wilson's War is a movie about it, where they fund the bad guys in order to manipulate Russia, just like the Azov movement, same thing they're doing now, again, Ukraine, and then just pretend, you know, basically the story goes they left and went away. And then, you know, but the point is they were still there. They're still manipulating. That is the basis for what we're talking about. Then you have the Saudi Arabian overlap with the Wahhabi kind of militant mindset that intertwines with that. This is ISIS. I mean, all these things are coming directly, provably from the people they're working with. And we can't acknowledge that, you know, acting like they're fighting extremism while they're working with the most extreme elements. And to bring this back to Israel, the fact that Israel literally funded Hamas, and I argue still does with the leadership to this very day.
I totally agree, man. 100%. 100%. Like, you can't go, what about Hamas? I go, dude, Israel created Hamas. You can't just ignore that. You can't just go, oh, I don't know if that's true. It's true. Just because you don't like it doesn't mean it may not be a fact. Right. There's facts out there you don't like, and this is the real problem we're getting into with our lives, that more and more it's becoming obvious that some unsettling facts are true. And if you can't have the discussion about the unsettling facts, you'll never fix the problem. We cannot inject feelings into certain situations because that what is being discussed makes you uncomfortable. We have to have a real discussion here, and we have to go, what we're doing to the Middle East is like a genocide. It's not just Palestine. It's like what we did to the Iraqis. It's what we did in Afghanistan. We commit genocide. We are genocidal. When they tell you 4 million people died from George Bush's war, how is he not talked in the same way as Hitler? Like, how do you not do that, dude? He's 2 million off. Throw in some Afghanis. We hit that number, dude. Oh, dude, if I was around, I would never sell for Hitler. I would never let Hitler run. You let him happen. 9/11, you fell for some bullshit.
Like, right. Or the COVID-19 situation, you guys failed to push back on that. Or right now, you failed to stand up against Israel. Like that question of what would you have done during World War II? And we're watching it more than once right now. You know, it's so infuriating when you can see someone like Madeleine Albright. Yeah, that's right. Right? That's her name?
Yeah.
Where she says, you know, I think it was 60 Minutes. Do you think it was worth it? Yeah, 500,000 children? Yeah, we think it's worth it. Like, think about that in the context of what we're dealing with now. And this is why it's so hilarious to watch these Zionists with their clumsy propaganda come out and be like, you didn't care about Iraq. So think about the point they're making when they say that. So it's okay that you commit genocide because we didn't care about that genocide? It's like, they don't think this stuff through. But it's crazy to see her say that it's okay. And right now, rightly so, people are screaming about 15,000 children because we should have been screaming. They should have been locked up for even acknowledging that that was okay. Of course, the argument is that it was like a byproduct, but it's the same game they're playing today. It's like, oh, human shields and all these overlaps. They're willfully allowing this to happen just like they did with Iraq. There was war crimes tribunals and things that were investigated, but think people like Bolton and Bush and the rest of them and Pompeo threatened the families of the ICC and yet just like they did today. You know, it's the same game. These are the same people doing the same things. Hopefully, we're going to see something shift with this one, though.
And for the record, I'm for all presidents being put on trial. Okay.
Thank you.
Yes. All right. I mean, I'm willing to throw in Trump if you'll give me everybody else.
Oh, that'd be easy.
Hey, I think Trump's, they're all equally as bad, man.
No, 100%. You want to try Trump? Go for it. I don't care, dude. As long as you give me Bill Clinton and the Bushes. If you give me Bill Clinton and the Bushes, I'll happily give you Donald
like
Trump.
Obama, yeah, too, I was about to say.
Throw in Obama, too. Chocolate Jesus, he can get it, too, dog. I don't even get, you know, it's just, it's absolutely, and like, it's crazy to me because, like, I have friends of mine, like, something happened to comedians, dude, and it's like, I'm just telling you, the cancel culture thing, that was a psyop that just did so much devastation, dude. It's, like, so crazy to me. Because there's this like older guard, which is me, and they're so scared of fucking cancel culture. And then like the younger guard, they don't give a fuck, bro. I mean, they say everything. It's like, yeah, I love it, dude.
Do you think it's because they have the power they can just redo it again?
No, because they were like in college. They weren't even doing stand-up. They were in high school when the Me Too thing was.
Okay, now it's time for this week's thought. As things stand at the moment, we owe it to ourselves to be of good cheer. I say this to you with all sincerity, fellow travellers, be of good cheer. In the hope that we're finally witnessing the end of all that's wrong in the world. And it won't be pretty, this ending of all that's wrong. On the contrary, it will be ugly. There's no getting away from it. You have to face up to it. But it has to happen. It's a process through which we have to go. And once the ending is over, there will be, of course, a beginning, a new beginning. And we can definitely, if we are minded so to do, we can see the beginning of the ending now. And it's revealed by the fact the target of the dying last moves of the perpetrators of all that's wrong is finally our children. In the UK, the enemy, and that's my shorthand for the perpetrators of all that's wrong, in the UK, the enemy talks about bringing back national service. That's how they couch it, because, you know, people who remember watching Dad's Army and the like, and so on and so on, and who have parents or grandparents who perform national service, it's an iron fist in a velvet glove. And in the present context, on account of those who are in charge, it's the on-ramp to the motorway heading towards conscription of our children into forever wars. And we needed to see this final revelation because it reveals the enemy's ugliest face. Those who would control the world always target the children sooner or later. It's inevitable. If you're anti-human, and the perpetrators of all that's wrong are anti-human to their core, then you desire and require nothing less than the death of the family which means the death of the children, the actual death of children. It's obvious now in every way, and if enough of us hold the line in defiance and in open contempt of all the old tricks being played one last time, we can be rid of our tribulations once and for all. It wasn't me, actually. It was Trudy was walking past a newsstand, and she saw a headline on one of the UK papers. National Service will toughen up British teenagers to face increasingly dangerous world. It was in the Daily Express, I believe, this very week. And the Daily Express is not by any means the worst of the foul drags, but it's nonetheless illustrative of the terminal decline of the enemy. The emptiness of the adversary we face, its complete lack of any sound substance of its own, leaves it no option but to wrap itself, to cloak itself, to disguise itself with the garments of another. Since it's the antithesis of life and humanity, what it means to be human and alive, the enemy needs to pretend at all times to be something else, needs to disguise its true nature. Now, National Service. A call for volunteers and service is right enough. There's nothing wrong with it when it comes from a good and honest place, when it invites the following of a good example set by benign leaders, benign shepherds. You know, where you're in circumstances that the leaders are good and dedicated to the well-being of good people, then the call for service might be positive and productive. But don't be fooled by the headlines now. What we are seeing is the antithesis of all that's good and right. The enemy hiding its anti-human nature, its anti-human reality, by seeking to imitate all that it is not and that it can never be. So, see this pathetic terminal behaviour for what it is, and, as I say, thereby endeavour to be of good cheer, because before the adversary falls once and for all, it must and will manifest its very worst self. Before we can be rid of it, we have to see it clearly. And that time, that opportunity, is before us now. I would say be ready for the servants of the adversary, the ventriloquist's dummies, to line up and trumpet whatever desperate nonsense is seen to be required, and urging support for that nonsense. So be ready for more headlines, and be ready for more hollow, empty sock puppets taking their turn one after another behind whichever podium to pretend their master's moves are well-intentioned. As part of the increasingly desperate efforts towards diversion and distraction, there will surely be more false flag events as well, so that I predict we will see more terrible things before it's over. False flag atrocities have presaged war throughout history. Wounds deliberately self-inflicted, or else planned and executed by others and not prevented when the consequences suit evil intentions all round. Some of those false flags of the past that strike me are the sinking of the USS Maine before the Spanish-American War, the assassination of Archduke Ferdinand before the Great War, the First World War, the attack on Pearl Harbor before World War II. It's widely conceded that attack had been planned and was coming, was well known, but nothing was done to stop it. Sometimes the evil in question is committed so as to make convenient the pointing of fingers at whomever the adversary might attack next. Iraq. Always and only for their own ends. At other times, likely atrocities are detected in advance, but they're allowed to happen, as I say, if the dreadful consequences might be exploited. And once you learn to spot false flags, you might join other dots to correctly identify many more, because false flags are set up again and again. Innocent people have died before, and more innocent people will die again, because false flags are tricks that work. False flags are the stock in trade of the adversary, and he will have spectacular atrocities in mind, I'm quite sure. Horrors shaped to frighten the gullible into accepting any offer of protection, even the protection of their erstwhile tormentor, which is the adversary. A bad boy did it and he ran away. That would be the horrified headlines in the aftermath of whatever happens. And, you know, we'll be told to be safe from more of it. It's necessary to accept digital IDs, central bank digital currencies, social credit scores, even more surveillance, limiting of energy, limiting of food, limiting of travel, all for our own good. But anyone with any sense, however, will not gather in that shadow cast by the tormentor, but will choose to find the light instead. I see the adversary is falling like a tree all but cut through at the base, finally hurt beyond survival by self-inflicted wounds. The enemy of all that's good, all that we might be and all that we might enjoy, that enemy is angry and frightened as never before on account of those wounds. And in the way of wounded predators, it's lashing out at the most vulnerable. And so, as I said at the top, it's the youngest generations that are in the crosshairs. The forever wars already being waged, and those that will come along in time, unless enough of us spot the tricks and say no to them and mean no, then those forever wars will be the inevitable destination for the children's crusade, shortly, I predict, to be called for by false prophets. The adversary we face is capable only of death and destruction. Every time the adversary gets his way, it's ordinary people that pay the price. Black, white and brown, Christian, Muslim and Jew, whoever. The intention, once more, is to set the same creeds against the same creeds, the same people against the same people. And even were the adversary to get his way once more and make more smoking rubble and more piles of dead, nothing at all will be raised in the aftermath. The adversary is incapable of creativity, incapable of positivity, of optimism, incapable of all that's life and that makes life worth living. And this is why we are surrounded by death, decline, and decay, moral decay, infrastructure decay, you name it, war and chaos, the general rendering into rubble that we see in other parts of the world. And this will keep happening until we see what is obvious and take the steps to be rid of it. Here's the thing. I say that when you get right down to it, the adversary is empty. In the end, in spite of all the chaos caused, the enemy is just piss and wind. In the end, there's nothing there. It's an empty void. I furthermore say the enemy is weaker now than it has ever been. It's more exposed than it's ever been, and therefore likely for some time to come to be more destructive and meddlesome than it has ever been. But if enough of us hold the line now, and by so doing encourage others to waken up and do likewise, then the enemy is going down. Not today, not tomorrow, but in the end, the enemy is going down.
I do want to thank you guys for listening. Praise Yeshua HaMashiach's name. Praise Jesus Christ's name. My Linktree is Alpha Male Buddhist Pod. Links are in the show note descriptions of this episode below. There in my link tree, you will find links to my Instagram, Telegram, Rumble, Odyssey, Twitter, and my free episode archives. If you're a new listener, I have also included links to my top-rated episodes. These are specific episodes of the podcast that are the most popular and listeners have given me the most positive feedback on. Some of these episodes are also in video format, so you can not only listen to the episode, but you can watch the accompanying video to that episode. Also, contact me for my free Academy of Liberation handbook, which is in PDF format, along with a free audiobook version of the handbook. So check out the show notes below of this episode for all of my content links. This podcast is hosted on the Podbean platform, so my website there is alphamalebuddhist.podbean.com.